We are here to create a team of leaders. Everyone should be able to represent the team everywhere. I really believe that smart people, they do a better job when they have more context. You realize that if you keep coding, you will neglect your first and main job, which is make sure you are there for people and for their development. People management is truly exhausting. I encourage all people managers to take time to think. Think about the career development of your people. Think about what's going on in the business. Think about what's going on in the team.
Hi, welcome to the Agile State of Mind podcast, where I deconstruct the role of engineering manager, try to make sense of the role confusion and understand the challenges of the transition from a developer to a manager. You can find this interview both on YouTube and as a podcast. The links are in the description. And today I will chat with João Alves. Please tell me if I managed.
Oh, it's pretty good, Maria.
I tried. I practiced when I was working with a Portuguese company, OutSystems. João is an engineering manager at Adevinta, formerly Schibsted, a Nordic and Norwegian company headquartered in Barcelona. Adevinta is a digital marketplace, connects buyers and sellers, helping people find jobs, cars, consumer goods. You probably know the pages if you buy something secondhand usually, but you probably don't realize it's Adevinta. And recently, the company acquired eBay, right?
Yeah, partially, right? The classifieds group of eBay.
Okay, so that's at least something that everybody knows. And guess where we met? We met in Freenow, of course. I think I need to start doing interviews with people that are formerly from Freenow. To me, it seems like the best leaders I knew worked in Freenow. And at that time, when we worked together in Freenow, João used to be backend chapter lead. And apart from that, you can find João on Twitter at João Q Alves. I will add the links below because it's not straightforward. And you also have a blog, World Hey Com, João Q Alves. And it was interesting because I learned that you write in four languages, basically, in English, Spanish, Portuguese, and Catalan. And you are a true polyglot. You beat me by one language. That is no unfair. Yeah, I object. And on your Twitter, I read that you are a software engineer by heart. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I truly believe that a leader of something should be well-versed on the subject. Maybe not the best software engineer in the world, maybe not the most geek person in the world, but I think it helps a lot bonding with the team and making sure they see you as more than a manager, as a peer. And to me, that was really key in the relationship I built during time with all the teams I worked with, right? So at the same time, I run some side projects myself. So I still feel some passion on building software. I don't do it every day at Adevinta, but I do it a bit at home. I try to balance a bit learning new things so I don't get out of game.
Yeah, that was my question because I know you, we worked together. So I remember how passionate you are about the coding. And I would like to understand a little bit, how do you feel? Because, you know, I do this podcast, especially for developers that are thinking about changing to the role. And they are thinking like how much they love coding and how much they might miss it when they move to the role. So how was it for you?
I missed a lot in the beginning. Actually, one of the mistakes I made was to keep coding too much, I would say. And this is a classical mistake, and I also did it. Yet, after a while, depending on what's your desire for your career progression, you realize that if you keep coding, you will neglect your first and main job, which is make sure you are there for people and for their development. Being a people manager is a full-time job, and it's very difficult to do both things well. There are people like Charity Majors. She says, if you think you are doing both things well, you are probably wrong.
It is a bit like when you talk, you know, in the classical understanding of a full stack developer, isn't that a bit similar? That if you are good at everything?
I think it's a bit different. I think you can have a good enough understanding of the full stack and work well on that regard. But people management is truly exhausting. If you take time to think, and I encourage all people managers to take time to think about the career development of your people, think about what's going on in the business, think about what's going on in the team. You realize that between that one-on-one clerical work and making sure everything works together, you have few time to do coding, if any at all. So I think it's a bit different. When you are full stack, your primary job is to code. And of course, you may not be excellent at all levels, but you can have a good enough grasp of it.
There's hoping then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually what I would like to understand first. And thank you for what you said. I think it's very important because I know a lot of developers that moved to the role of a manager and they are exhausted at the end of the day because, you know, it's so much different. When you were a coder, you were like, okay, you could focus for a long stretch of time and then you didn't have to have so many social interactions, which you right now do, right? What would be a tip from your side to those people at the beginning when they move and they suddenly are overwhelmed, like, oh my God, nobody told me this is administration work. I didn't apply to be an admin.
Yeah, good one. So my only tip, I would say, control your calendar. Don't let your calendar control you, right? So this is pretty typical to many people, for developers, but also for managers, especially for first-time managers. Make sure that you are the one in control of your calendar. You set when you are going to go to meetings, when you are not. Distribute a meeting, especially one-on-ones, throughout the week. Make sure if you have 10 one-on-ones, 5 one week, 5 the other week, and something like that. Avoid like one day fully of one-on-ones because that's truly, truly exhausting. And you don't have even time to think about the feedback you want to give to people, which then it shows, right? When people, they receive bad feedback, they realize immediately that you didn't think about it. So this would be my first and only tip.
Okay. And do you have, since we are on the one-on-ones, do you have like a template or something that you use? What do you do? Like, do you make notes? Do people add notes? How do you do them? And what are the topics that you usually tackle there?
Yeah, so I share a document with every person. It's a Google Docs, pretty collaborative. We both see what each other write there. I try to put topics that I want to talk about in the next one-on-one before the meeting, and I encourage people to do the same so we can prepare a bit before. And so I take notes of everything, and people also take notes of what they find relevant. We track actions and these actions and all the flow is visible by the both parties at any time, right? So it's a shared Google Docs. Mm-hmm. As for a template, usually I start with a bit of a chit chat, right? Something, what happened in your life, rather than going straight to work, right? What happened in your life? How is your dog? If I know that person was getting their son or their daughter to the hospital, I ask, how is he or how is she? So trying to create a bit of bonding. So
human interaction, like
human interaction. Yeah, human interaction is really important, right? So it's not just a transactional work thingy, especially after the pandemic and after COVID. I realized that many interactions became transactional, only talking about work. And it's pretty important that people feel that you are interested in their lives and you also share yours, right? So I also tend to share a bit of what I do, what I'm up to, these kind of things. So we spend a couple of minutes, depending on the topic and how interested we are in the topic. It ranges from 5 to 15 minutes of the one-on-one. And this also allows me to make sure I understand people better, right? So if I see someone is single and they live with their dog, they are looking for social connections in the company, I already take this into consideration and make sure we create team lunches, we create opportunities for socializing and this kind of thing. So it's not transactional, yet I take the time to reflect on these human interactions. And then the usual template is to ask different questions. How do you see the team? How do you see your personal growth? I try to change topics every one-on-one. Not every one-on-one is the same. I don't ask always the same questions. And I also provoke thinking on people, right? Trying to ask sometimes it's the same question in two different weeks, but in a different form, right? So give me feedback. What is the thing that you are not doing and you'd like to do? What is the thing that you would expect me to do and I'm not doing? These kind of things. So this is more or less my templates. I have, I will pass you the link afterwards, but there's a GitHub repository with awesome questions that you can just pick and say, I will ask this on the next one-on-one. And sometimes just changing a framing of a question will give you a lot more information than a previous question that maybe it was too obvious or too transactional.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, please. I will add the links in the description because I think it's so great to have a one-on-one that's actually like you know that somebody put thought in it and it's not just like, so how are you? Yeah, okay. And then you start talking about the sprint, basically, right? Mm. So then it's like, where, how can I? But then my question is, do you ever talk about like, okay, something happened and we need to talk about this? Or if you have one-on-ones every week or every 2 weeks, depending, how much about the growth can you actually talk? Like, you already know what the person wants. Do you like review the progress or?
Yeah, it's mainly about reviewing goals and pushing people to be a better version of themselves, right? Sometimes, so the first realization is that people suck at putting goals. I suck putting goals for myself, right? So it's always helpful to have someone that pushes you and challenges you and say, look, how is this progressing? Let's put a deadline. So people hate deadlines. I hate deadlines, but they are really effective when it comes to make people action on their release. And also sometimes people, they have a nebulous way of defining where they want to grow. The job then becomes giving them the right resources to open their minds on what are the possibilities. So sometimes people, they don't know what are the possibilities for growth. It's not only management. It's not only tech leadership. There are broad set of functions that people can develop. And it's not only just to pull the ladder, right? It's not just a clean the ladder. It's about going broad on your skill set and making sure that people understand that it's not just about the next promo. It's about developing their own skills for their own good. It's not just about developing people for Adevinta. I would love people develop their skills inside Adevinta, and I push for that. But I'll be totally happy and totally fine if people develop their skill set and they find something better somewhere else. Right? I'm attached to the people, not exactly to where we are right now and where we are working right now. This is mainly the part, right? So making sure people, they follow up on their goals and making sure they reach them, or we can change them. If people, they are stuck because they can't do something, making sure you say to them, you have the time to do this. I support you doing this. You can do this inside your working hours, because sometimes it's not clear that you should work on your personal development during working hours. And this is especially true for parents or for people that they have some activities outside the work. So this is mainly what we do, right? So it's not just always talking about philosophical growth. We do that like once or twice a year, but following up on specific goals.
Okay, that's very noble of you to let people develop themselves. This is where you actually inspire people and motivate them to work, right? Because they know it's not only about pushing them for results and the current delivery, it's about just feeling good and feeling that you are improving and learning all the time. Thank you for that. That was very interesting. And could you explain a little bit your role? Because I try to deconstruct the role here as well. And as you probably know, we have engineering managers, we have team leads, we have tech leads, and it's very confusing, and there's no one definition for each of them. So I would like to understand first what you're doing right now, but also how this is different from what you were doing in Free Now, where you were the chapter lead.
Interesting question. So right now, I consider myself the CEO of the team, if I'm allowed to do this analogy.
Nice.
I take care mainly of creating systems at work. What I mean for this is making sure we have the right talent, hiring and growing people, making sure we have the right budget. I'm responsible for the whole cloud budget of the team and making sure that we stay on budget, making sure we do these kind of non-sexist things that make things work. And then construct systems at work, I mean, making sure that the team works, we do ceremonies, whatever the team finds necessary for plannings or stand-ups or retrospectives, empower the team to run these themselves. I'm not running stand-ups. I'm not running retrospectives. I did, leading by example. Mm-hmm. And then we found a way to create a system that doesn't need me, right? So this is the ultimate goal. The team should not need me to work well together. Then the relationship with stakeholders, both other teams inside the organization or outside or in different departments, making sure we are listening to their concerns. In this case, I need to give a bit of context because we are creating an internal product for engineers inside Adevinta. So it's pretty important that we listen to their concerns, that we have a clear product backlog that we are constantly feeding with feedback from our users. And yeah, this is mainly...
So your mm-hmm. customers are the other employees over at Devinta that are in the same office, and you can go and just ask them, like, what do you need?
Yes, it's a pretty interesting setup and also a challenging one. Whenever your users are engineers like you, they are pretty opinionated about how things should work.
Yeah. Or so you are like a platform team that creates platform services.
Indeed.
I like the analogy of being a CEO of the team. And is that different from what you are doing as a chapter lead? Because for me, it's important to understand that there are still companies, I don't know how many of them, but there are still companies that have this kind of functional lead across, like backend or frontend.
Yeah, guilds or chapters or whatever you want mm-hmm. to. The main difference for me is that inside a team, you have control end to end of the delivery, right? So you are also accountable for the delivery of something. And while I was chapter lead, I was not really accountable of the delivery of any team because I couldn't be accountable for all the team, right? Yeah. When I was a chapter lead, it was more like a mix of staff / principal engineer, someone with deep understanding of the technology and deep understanding of distributed systems and making sure we were onboarding people effectively into the technology so they were empowered to deliver things. And on the other side, the people management side was more again about their growth, but only or mostly scoped on the technology itself, right? I also find the chapter lead role was necessary back then in Freenow because we were growing a lot from month to month. Mm-hmm. So onboarding people on specific technologies and aligning the whole guild or the whole chapter was really, really important. So everyone was effective doing their jobs. Afterwards, we changed to these chapter leads to become engineering managers responsible for the delivery end to end. I spent a few months there with this model, and then I joined Adevinta. But I find the engineering manager model more sustainable in the long run, right? So I think both, they have a place. But if I was responsible to set up something like this right now, most likely I would set up a chapter lead without people management responsibilities, making sure they were aligning the whole mm-hmm. chapter and let the people management responsibilities be together with the delivery ones, because I think this creates good incentives for the manager, right? Because you become accountable of the delivery. Otherwise, you may optimize for something, but it's not the best for the company.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. But what comes to my mind is, especially in bigger companies where you have product teams, because I don't know how about if you have more teams in platform or just one team. But what I mean is the dependencies between the team. So if you have a team lead, let's call it to be clear, in each of the team, how do you make sure that then they somehow are aligned and they don't step on each other's toes, especially in those different, like the front end guys don't recreate the wheel over and over because you don't know that the other team already did this, and the same for backend and the same for other ones. How do you navigate if you don't have somebody who's like across all the teams?
I think it's necessary to have people across the teams doing this kind of work. What I meant is that I don't think that these people should be people managers, right? So I would separate here management from leadership. Yes, okay. We need strong backend leadership, front-end leadership, that they work together as a group of leaders in their specific areas, but they're individual contributors that they are focused and they are domain experts.
So like tech leads, now I learned that this is kind of a tech lead, like Luis is working right now in Cameo, right?
It could be a tech lead. I like what Will Larson, he is the CTO of Calm, and he was previously a VP of infrastructure at Uber. He refers to these positions as staff engineers, right? So mm-hmm. people above senior, that they have a more diffuse role across the organization. And one of their responsibilities is exactly this one, making sure things are aligned across their discipline, but also with other domains like front-end and back-end or systems and back-end and this kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So yeah, then you create quite a lot of leadership roles, maybe, but in the end, you need that because otherwise I worked with up to 30 teams in my previous company. We had RTEs, we had like Scrum Masters of Scrum Masters kind of thing, where we were people who are trying to help and facilitate the alignment and the dependency resolution and so on. But we didn't have this kind of role that would be very interesting to have. We had architects though, but the architects were just creating the solution, like the diagram for the teams that they were then using. So yeah, why aren't you shaking your head?
Yeah, so I truly believe on fully empowered teams. And while the word architect can be used in several ways, right? When I hear people doing diagramming, so other people implement this diagramming, I'm a bit on the fence, right? So I can tell you what our staff engineers do at Adevinta, which I like. Mm-hmm. They do architecture, but architecture is part of the software engineer's role, right? So every software engineer is an architect. Of course, they have the accountability of the architecture, but they are not mm-hmm. sole responsible of the architecture. So I think this is the main distinction.
So how do you do that? Do you, now we're going to like the RFC maybe? Well, how do you collaboratively create architecture?
Good question. Let's go back to what are the properties desired for architecture. If we start from a point where we believe our engineers are capable of doing architecture, and I believe that my engineers are capable of doing architecture, then it becomes a matter of transparency and inclusiveness. How can I make sure our decision-making is transparent, and how can I make sure it's inclusive? So it's not just tech leads talking with tech leads in a meeting weekly, but this is pervasive and ubiquitous across the company. That's why I think writing becomes a superpower. Why? Because writing scales really well. If I write it once and I can share it like 1,000 times and people can get exactly what I want to talk about. While if I do this through meetings, I can be like 3 weeks talking with everyone to try to build a commitment across something, and the result will not be as inclusive, right? So the request for comments that you are mentioning is a way to give transparency and inclusiveness to the organization and empowering people to say, okay, I'm interested in this part of the architecture. I will chime in here and I will put my comments and I will put a proposal. If I'm not interested in that other part, that's fine. There most likely someone else will be interested. So you create this, there's no decisions behind closed doors. All decisions are open. That doesn't mean that every decision is democratic or just going through pure consensus, but there is a way for people to understand how the sausage are made, right? Or how the decisions are made, instead of relying on some architects doing some diagrams in some room somewhere, right?
Yeah, I like the part of inclusive, that you include people in the whole thinking process. And I love what you said, that writing becomes a superpower. It really makes sense. And but it's hard. Like I remember that when we were in Free Now, you were the one to suggest to do RFC, which is request for comments. So it's like a document where you create a proposal for some change and you are requesting comments from some specific people that you would like to hear from. How did you manage to roll it out to the whole company? And that's, I think, at least to the Barcelona office, everybody started using it. How did you manage to do that? And as well, the next question would be, did you offer it in Adevinta or was it already there?
Actually, the story is funny because the first time I saw RFCs inside the company, it was back in Shifter. I used to work back in Shifter before I joined Free Now. And what I realized back then is that it was a really inclusive way of doing things. So whenever I joined Free Now, I had this in the back of my mind. And I realized that the company was growing a lot and many people was joining. There was a lot of decisions being made every day by really smart people. Yet some decisions impact other teams and there was no clear transparency on this whole process. When I realized this, I also came across an article from Gagar Lioros. He was an engineering manager at Uber. He also mentioned that RFCs were a thing there. I proposed this to Nico. I bounced some ideas with him. He was my manager back then, and he just encouraged me to do it. And the way I went about it was I saw a problem, and I took the ownership of doing the first one or the first couple of RFCs myself. Right? So I took the time, I wrote the RFC, I explained it to people what it was. I had some conversations with other managers and other engineers. But by having these conversations, I was able to see, okay, this person is really keen on this. So let's leverage that this person is like a supporter or a champion of this idea and making sure that this person starts putting comments and starts creating like a virtuous circle. So other people can say, okay, I see that this engineer is commenting, so why am I not entitled to do it? I'm also entitled to do it, right? So making sure you find champions that support your idea is important, making sure you own the thing and you are leading by example. It's not just throwing the idea in the air, it's also owning it. It's also leading by example and explaining to people by doing how usually this kind of thing works. And then this is contagious, like a virus. So people, they see the value, they see the transparency, they see other people commenting, they start commenting. And in 1, 2 months, 3 months, you start seeing people creating their own RFCs. And you don't need to do anything else, right? So you created the system, you created the virtuous loop, and now it works by itself.
That's great. So then you need to first do it yourself and lead by example how it should be done. And then you find champions, the people that believe in it, and then you get them to comment and then to also start their own RFCs. Yeah, good luck to me. And then you went back to Adevinta and they kept on doing that.
Adevinta is a pretty different company now, because when it was divided from Schibsted, some teams were rebuilt from zero because most of people were working in Norway, and then Norwegian offices, it still is part of Schibsted. Yet inside the team I joined, there was this culture of design documents, which are quite similar to RFCs. The team was already very transparent regarding architecture. They were really keen on the idea already. So I didn't have to do much work on that regard. Yet, cross teams, we needed to improve on the transparency cross team. And that's where we could leverage the example of the team I joined and extend it to the rest of the organization. And also at the product level, we work in a platform team, yet we treat our platform as a product. Right, so we have a product backlog, we have product owners, we have stakeholders, we do demos, these kind of things. The product people, which are engineers in this case, they also are keen on creating these requests for comments and making sure they align between themselves and making sure everyone can chip in and give their ideas. Coming back, it was really easy, yet this is scope to this department. There are other people in other departments that they also do it, but it is not like a cross organizational mm-hmm. thing, at least yet. But I believe that in the future, we will be able to roll it out to more and more teams.
Okay, and one last question about this topic. So if you are, your clients are actually the other developers, how do you roll it out so everybody can see it? Do you usually just do it within your own team, or would you like to get the comments from their real users?
Good question. depends a bit on the team and on who writes or who shepherds the RFC. We are pushing towards including the user in this process because we believe it creates value to be transparent with them. Yet we don't always do it, and I believe we suffer from this, and we got feedback from that, right? So people sometimes feel that there's a client-provider relationship between teams where we should be more like partners mm-hmm. in crime, and we should make sure we work more together and we are more inclusive. Sometimes for the users, it feels like we work in a very waterfall way, right? Gathering requirements, black box, and then we mm-hmm. present a solution. While we don't work in a waterfall way, we are quite agile, and we try to deliver small chunks that give mm-hmm. value to the users. They don't see this process from the behind the scenes, right? So we realized that including users is a must in this kind of design documents. And we did that recently with one of them. And people were really interested in understanding things. And in the case of Adevinta, since we are quite a big company and there are many things happening, we needed to go one step further. It was not enough to share these documents to comment asynchronously. It was necessary in some cases to have some reading sessions with people and to have some kind of interviews with them. So there was a closer relationship. I think, again, we learned this from the pandemic. Human connections matter a lot. It's not just knowing people from a Slack message or from a document. It matters to understand the context, and it matters to have this more human connection. So I believe we are going that path where users see and comment and they are more engaged with RFCs. And we realize that it's not enough. We need to create further communication.
Okay. Yeah, this is one of the most difficult and complex things in the company, right? The black box that you mentioned. And it happens in so many levels. Sometimes it's even the UXers, like in the product team, would feel that whatever developers do is a black box for them because they are not included in the team. And it's even though you would like to share and you think this is collaboration, we need to collaborate, creating those moments where you give people the opportunity is like, sometimes they would get so overwhelmed that sometimes like, you want to include me everywhere. I don't have time for this. I need to focus on my work. So this is right. It's like, we want this, but at the same time, we don't have time for this. And we don't have like mental capacity to do so many things at the same time. So yeah, I imagine this must be not too easy. One question that comes to my mind, you mentioned you are agile. Do you have agile coaches? You didn't mention, do you have agile coaches? Do you have any help from that part of the company?
Yeah, we do have agile coaches. They are available for us in a pool model, mm-hmm. right? So whenever we need help, especially some cross-team retrospective or something more delicate, or we are seeing that somehow our daily standups are not working or our practices on our Kanban board are not ideal, we have this communication with them. They also survey us once a year to understand what's the state of Agile across the company, right? Before, we had Agile coaches more embedded into the team, yet with the merger with the Big Classified Group, there was a decision. This would not scale, right? So we doubled the number of teams. We would need to double the number of Agile coaches. And we also realized that some teams were more mature than others, so they were not mm-hmm. really needing a full-time Agile coach yet. I really appreciate when I can bounce some ideas with Jonathan. We work also in Freelance together. Nice. So Jonathan is there. He's part of our organization and he can always help on difficult retrospectives, cross-team, or bouncing ideas on, okay, we implemented the data metrics to understand what are the pain points of the team. We do sometimes health checks to see, aside from the retrospectives, what are some things that are not working in the team. So every now and then we work together to work on specific things, but they are not available full time for everyone.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So because now I'm also thinking how many people we have right now in the team, you know, because for example, when we were working in Free Now, we had like a typical Scrum team. So there wouldn't be a leader of the team, but then you would have a Scrum Master who would, sometimes it's very similar because you are not people manager, but you are also this kind of person that helps the process, helps the team. And then your goal is not to be needed, which is like a very utopian goal sometimes. But now that you have, you know, you have probably a PM, like a PO, you have a CEO of the team and you have other roles, like how many people you can have in the team that are kind of their leadership, right?
Good one. We have a ratio. So for 10 people, I would say that 3, they hold a leadership role or a formal leadership role. Right. In this case, it's the product owner, it's the tech lead, and it's me. I think 1/3 of the team should be more or less the ratio we use at least, and it's quite effective. Yet there's something I always tell the team, which is we are here to create a team of leaders. Everyone should be able to represent the team everywhere, in any presentation, in any conference, in any relationship with stakeholders. We shouldn't need me, we shouldn't need the tech lead, we shouldn't need the product owner. We try to empower people, and how we do this by somehow putting them in uncomfortable situations, presenting in public, making sure they collect requirements from users and they get firsthand feedback. It's not just the product owner talking with users, people, they do support, they do this kind of activities that then, I really believe that smart people, they do a better job when they have more context, and we strive to give this context to everyone and to expose people to different roles. And while they have not like a formal accountability on something, they are able to perform this kind of jobs, right? So this is more or less the mindset that we try to create on the team.
I love that. I really love this part of empowering the people, because one of my biggest problems with the team lead role is that if not done in an agile, empowering way, it's very easy to become bottleneck, to become the only one representative of the team. It's like you disempower the team so much on the company level, on the organizational level, that when you want to talk to a team, you just mention a team lead. There's like, the team doesn't even exist. And then whatever you do, you only do it with the team lead. So then it so much depends on the personality and skills of the team lead to waterfall down everything that's happening in the organization so the team knows about it. And then empowering people to maybe, you know, you don't have to go to every meeting with the stakeholders, with everybody. Maybe somebody can represent, as you say, maybe somebody can do a presentation and present and do the demo, you know, not you or the PM or the PO. So yeah, this part for me, especially given that we were, when you have a Scrum team and there's no leader, you just have to talk to many people and they are by nature empowered and they have to show what they did. It so much depends. I don't know if you had any experiences with this kind of different experience.
I think I do on a different level, which is before I made a distinction between management and leadership, and individual contributors, they can be leaders, right? They can be leaders of their own discipline. They can be architects that overseeing a certain department and whatever. Yet, in many cases, people that are in the room, they are managers. If you have people that they are responsible and they are experts on something, why do you have managers in the room? Being a people manager is already a full-time job. For me, this is difficult to conciliate, right? So when I see these kind of situations, I always point out this, right? So if we want to empower individual contributors to be leaders of something, they need to be in the room. They need to present to the CTO. They need to present to VP of engineering of something. I don't see this a lot of times. Whenever there's a project, most of times the people invited in the meeting calendar, they are the managers of the team. So I don't see yet this culture happening everywhere, but I think it's the job of the, if you notice it, you should also fix it. I have no value for this meeting. I will invite this person. He is the expert. He will perfectly be able to present something or do something. And then what we should work on is also on defining expectation. If I'm not on the meeting, or if most of the team is not in the meeting because we have a representative, be it me, be it the product owner, be it an engineer, we need to cascade this to the team, right? Write a summary. We were in this meeting, we discussed about A, B, and C, and we decide X, Y, and Z. Again, it works by leading by example. Whenever you are in a meeting, for instance, a management meeting, the people that are not managers, they don't attend. You do the summary. Of course, if there's confidential information, you can put it, but most of the information is not confidential. You put it there and people start again going into this loop. Okay, I go to a meeting. Most of my colleagues are not here, but I will cascade this back to the team. And if in the next time it's a different colleague going to that meeting, they already have the context, mm-hmm. what was spoken about. I still see a lot of places where this doesn't happen. Again, I think we should be the ones that if we see this, we should do something about it.
Okay, makes sense. And what do you think about when you have, maybe you didn't have that problem, but I suppose you might, if you have a developer that considers that, well, you know, many times people are very introverted and they consider that, well, I develop. I code, that's my job. And I don't know if it's because of the introvert part or it's because they are shy or they just, as you said at the beginning, it costs you so much to have all those social interactions and it's so mind-blowing. So what do you do to present this other view that, okay, it's not only about coding. You have to go and put yourself out there and present and do all those other things that when you think about the programmer's role, they are not embedded so much at the first sight.
Yes. So this happens a lot. I think the first step is to understand exactly what's the root of this. Is it because they find it bullshit? Is it because they are shy? Is it because there are some people that they talk a lot in meetings, so they feel like diminished by mm-hmm. these people somehow? So they don't feel they have something to say because other people, they are already saying a lot of stuff. Depending on what it is, there's different ways of calibrating. In case of, we have a small team of two people, one of them is quite, he speaks a lot, the other is a bit more shy, right? So what we did was to make sure we were transparent about this, and we created a system where, depending on the meeting, one of them takes a more active role by default and leads the meeting, and the other is like the companion, and the other way around. So making sure everyone always can say something. There are other cases where people, they are not interested in presenting, or while we should be mindful of inclusiveness in this case as well. Inclusiveness is not just about gender, race, and ideas. It's about different personalities. Some people, they are just different and they are more introvert, and there are space for them too, right? The important part is to again, understand what are their motivations and see where there are parts that they are more keen to work on. Maybe some people, they are not, they don't want to present in public, but they want to write blog posts, or they want to write an RFC. Or some people, they mm-hmm. want to code, and you can find a way for them to communicate with their programming, or by giving them more like a support role and making sure they talk with users about code, but they talk with users. Right, so there are different ways depending on people to do this. And finally, there's the last case, which is people think that they can just progress in their careers by coding, and then you need to have a really honest conversation with them. Coding is important up to a standard or up to a level if people want to have impact across team, across the company, in the industry. They need to go out of their comfort zone. They need to do something else, and something else can be many things. This is an uncomfortable conversation to have with people because some people, they feel entitled. Oh, I will just go in my room from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and I will earn 95% of the market money, and no one needs to bother me with meetings or talking with users. And there's the part where I think the management needs to set the tone, right? And it's not a threat to anyone, but it's putting things like they are. If you really want to do this way, if you don't want to broaden your skill set, it's likely that you will get stuck at some point in your career. I think there's no harm on having this kind of conversations because people, they need to understand what's going to happen. And to avoid frustrations in the future, why was I not considered for promotion, right? So these are like the different shades of gray with introvert people or people that just want to code.
Interesting. Yeah. I recently spoke with Luis about this a lot, and we came to a conclusion that it is a bit too late that we introduced this soft skills, hello, because, you know, I think we are setting people for not for a great success if when they are still junior we don't mention, hey, I understand you are, because we are in this code like, oh, you just code, I'm happy that you just code, don't think about anything else, just go to the essential meetings. But then they think when they will just code greatly, you know, like be really expert and good at coding, that will be it, they will be successful. And then, you know, I think it's like going back to the education and even on the university or wherever you learn, like going to a bootcamp, whatever, they should start explaining there that coding is not only about code, like, you know, the podcast of Luis, No es solo código. And do you think it would be better if we set this expectation way before? And not when somebody's already, they consider themselves a senior and then they are frustrated because like, why didn't you consider me? I am very good at what I do.
Absolutely. I must say though, that what I'm seeing from people coming out of the university right now, they are way better communicating than my generation was 10 years ago, but way better. And I also got this feedback from a director of engineering, he was my previous manager at Adevinta, is hiring a lot of junior profiles from different universities in Spain, and is astonished with the level of communication people come from the university. Last year, we had an early careers, someone coming straight from the university in our team, and the level of his communication is amazing. He's asking the right questions, giving a good summary of what happened. It's fantastic to see that the new generation, they are more keen on this. I'm not sure if it's because they have more people in YouTube, in Twitch, and they are more used to this kind of communication. But for me, this is something that we should absolutely seek, and we should set the tone. Again, as a manager, I think there's one big important part of the job, which is setting the tone. If people that join the team see that you not only praise good delivery or good code, but you praise the what's called the glue work, people that communicate well, and you say, look, this is exactly the kind of communication that makes our team going forward. At the end of the day, the culture is not what you have in the walls. The culture is what you say to people, and whatever you give a prize for. If people don't see people get promoted because they communicate well, instinctively, they will go towards what makes their promotion easier or whatever, right? So it's about setting the tone constantly and making sure it becomes a cultural thing.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for that. Yeah, this was, I will make a snapshot of what you just said and like put it as a standalone video, I think, for all the managers. It's so important. And yeah, and it's so hard to change it once, you know, you start getting used to just not participating in the meetings and you just do your coding. It's so hard to change later when people get accustomed to this kind of work. So now that we are coming to the end, but I still want to talk about one big thing, the async communication that you mentioned a little bit, and also like the agile stuff, you know, now we need to talk about a little bit about the agile stuff in my area. I read a little bit of the Pragmatic Engineer. I can't pronounce his name.
Literally.
So I was reading that most of the companies, they go away from Scrum or go away from Kanban and they just do something themselves. I would like to understand what you do. what is the framework that you follow in your team?
So I think here the interesting part is not about the framework itself, it's about the culture, right? I think in Agile, it's the culture you promote in the team. Of course, there are many tools that it's great to have in your tool set, like Scrum, Kanban, retrospectives, daily stand-ups, whatever, right? Yet, I believe that's always something that we can present to the team as an option, right? And based on the problems we are seeing, they can decide exactly what fits better for themselves, right? So in our case, we do some kind of Kanban adapted to our needs. We don't go to the Kanban book and say, oh, we need to do this and this and that. No, it's not like that. Maybe it's not what I would do if I was the whole team. Maybe I would do it differently. But it's something that it works for the team. The team is delivering and the team is happy with the current things that we have. So for me, it's less about a framework and more about giving options, right? So we have this, we have that. There are people doing this in the industry. What could work for us, and make sure that people, they have access to these tools and they can decide what's better for the team, right? So in this case, we use Kanban as a framework if we want to do it, but because the team wanted to use it, nothing else, right? I don't have a strong preference on that. Regarding asynchronous communication, this is actually one of the interesting parts that I will relate to the previous one. We were seeing that our daily stand-ups were taking like 30 minutes, and this was like unattainable. And someone in the team said, look, what we do is a bit like reporting, right? So we talk about what we did yesterday, what we are doing today, and these kind of things. Why don't we focus on the blockers each day or on the things that we want to move to done? And if we want to say something else to the team, because we attended the meeting and there's a summary that's important, or we found something that's good that we share amongst us, why don't we do an asynchronous update, whatever we feel it's relevant. Anyone can read, anyone can comment, it's fine. And it reduces a lot the frustration with daily standups. Again, I was not the one proposing. Someone in the team came up with this idea. And then we iterated this to a Slack channel where we just post this kind of update. So we don't clutter our usual channel with this. And it was pretty well. Right now, I have someone that is somehow shadowing me because they will get the management of the team while I'm away. They found this pretty interesting, right? So they found themselves more informed about what's going on by reading what team members were working. And then we leverage the stand-ups to talking about these kind of discussions about blockers or something that some feedback that we got from the customer that's really important for the task that we are doing. So I would say this, right? So for me, frameworks are less important. And I believe that agility is more like a state of mind, like you say, you know, in your videos and in your podcast. So I try to live by that example.
Wow, great. It's so great you mentioned the name of my podcast. So just to understand and summarize what I understand. So you do dailies in person, like via Zoom or whatever, but you only talk about blockers and something interesting that happened. And then the typical updates of where I worked on that and this is almost finished, so on that. So this goes to the separate channel and you post it when? Like by the end of the day, in the beginning of the day?
Usually in the beginning of the day, we have a bot that warns us to put the message there. It's also very useful because in some cases, again, there are some meetings that just one of us attended and it's useful to put that, oh, by the way, this is what we discussed, blah, blah, blah. And people can ask further questions like, oh, did you discuss exactly this? Or what's happening in that meeting? Can you give me a bit more insights on that? So it's really working very well for us.
Nice. I was asking about that. I wanted to really talk about the daily with you because what I recently see, and I think this is like a post-pandemic syndrome, is like the yesterday, today blocker style of daily is so dead. It's just I spoke with Jana, who was a Scrum Master in Free Now as well, and we both thought like, yeah, we will just put fire to it, like we will write it somewhere and like YTB, you know, that's the abbreviation, like put fire to it and like please let's forget that this ever existed and let's move on, because It's one thing that you just go and you are in the circle in front of the board in the office, which was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, people did that. And then you just, you see the people, so you cannot really be doing something totally different, even though it was a bit boring. But at least you saw the people. But right now that we are all remote, and you, even though you probably have a team that goes to the office, they will never be at the office at the same day. So you always have to do a remote daily. It just doesn't work. And it's just so, so frustrating, like so sad to see, you know?
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, we found that, right? So we found no special value. There was some value from what people were telling us. But at the end of the day, if everyone is spending like 3 minutes talking about something, even if it's interesting, then you disconnect.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like 8 people doing the same.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, you see people suffer and you're like, why are you doing this? And they don't know. When you're on your own, do you ask them why? And it's like on autopilot. We just did it forever, so we keep on doing it. And this is one of the subjects that I'm very passionate about, and I would like to just change totally the way we do daily stand-ups. And I'm with you. I think this should be that. Like, I still see this great value of getting together, because it's like the only part of the day that you like, you start the day together or end the day, whatever, but you just see everyone and you can share something, but you don't have to do the format and like bore people to death with your updates.
Indeed.
So yeah, I'm glad, and it's very interesting how you do it. It's good to have these other tips how to do it just to avoid the boredom. And okay, now that we are almost at the end, that my two last questions I always ask. So first one would be, what would be like your tips for the first time manager, somebody that just moved from a developer? You mentioned at the beginning about the one-on-ones, but now I would like the overall general tip.
Control your calendar. Make sure you have time to think. It's important to think about your teams, your team members' careers, these kind of things. Read about what others are doing. It's not just to copy and paste what they are doing, but to inspire ourselves and to open our mind. And I recommend not only reading about software engineering, I recommend reading about management in general, because it gives a perspective on how people in other industries, they do things. And then start reading a bit on the psychology part of things. So what motivates people? What drives people? It's not only money. It's not only coding. So somehow you need to broaden your skills, and psychology is part of it, right? So control your calendar, make sure you have time to think, read about psychology, and talk less and listen more.
Okay. So you need to be a Renaissance person to be a leader. And do you have any recommendations? So, because, you know, I love to like give a book that you read or a blog or some person that you think it's really worthwhile reading what they write or watching the videos.
I have a couple of them. I love the book Turn the Ship Around, a very hierarchical organization that was transformed with transformational leadership. I learned a lot. It was not about software, and I learned a lot about that. The same about Maverick, a Brazilian guy implementing agile without calling it agile in the 70s in Brazil. So he's like mind-blowing too. And then I like to follow a couple of people. Charity Majors, she was a former infrastructure engineer at Facebook, and she has a lot of good opinions on on-call, team healthiness, inclusiveness. Also, I follow the Pragmatic Engineer. I take the data he presents more than his full opinions. I think opinions should be for the reader and not taken from someone else. And Will Larson, he was a VP of infrastructure at Uber, and he has a lot of great insights about how to design organizations. I think designing organizations is one of the most difficult parts of the manager's job, and doing it wrong has a huge consequence on the organization. So these are more or less the people that inspire me, both from the software industry and leaders that work in some things that are really disconnected from something.
Okay, thanks so much. And please send me all the links, so I will include them in the description. And last but not least, so now that you actually have some sneak peek into the people that the new engineers that come from the university, which is like the Generation Z right now. How do you see what's like the trend? Like, what's the future of leadership given the new generation and also given the post-pandemic remote that I don't think we're going to get rid of that anytime soon? So how would you see, like, what's the trend that's taking up?
The trend is making sure these people are involved on day one and they take projects on day one and they are empowered on day one to lead anything, right? They are very against top-down decision-making. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand where they come from. They are excellent communicators, making sure you use these communication skills they have, making sure that from day one you treat them as an adult and give them projects to lead. This would be my main tips to deal with Gen Z, if I may say so.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So that's basically what, going back to what we said about the education, that we want the wide variety of topics for people to take up as opposed to just like, okay, I come here to just code. Okay, thank you so much. That was very interesting. I have so many tips. I can't wait to share all of them with the wider world. So yeah, I hope that we will talk again, because I actually thought when we were speaking that I have so many other topics that I would like to talk about, but there's no time. I want this to be under an hour so we don't overwhelm with information. But those are some great tips. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed it too.
Thank you so much, Maya, for inviting me. It was really great to talk about it. As you said, you could be here like talking 30 hours in a row. Let's do it at any other time. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.